It is Tuesday, June 11, 2024, 7 p.m., and I call the Wrangell Assembly to order. Tonight, the Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Assemblymember Dalrymple.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Assemblymember Robbins.
Here.
Morrison.
Here.
Audison.
Here.
Dalrymple.
Here.
Dave Powell.
Here.
DeBoer.
Here.
The mayor's here.
Here. Ceremonial matters, there are none. Persons to be heard.
We have three individuals. Two of them are on topics of the harbor, and then one additional.
Okay. May I have the paper, please? Thank you. All right. Wayne Ellis and Chris Ellis, would you like to speak now or on the item, which would be item 13A?
I will speak. We're going to speak separately.
Okay. Yeah. So first up is...
Wait until it comes up.
My name's Wayne Ellis.
Okay.
I'd like to speak to the insurance requirement and the surcharge requirements in the harbor. I'd like to point out that I've recently acquired a boat which is 30.6 feet, which is 30 feet 0.6 inches. It has a 2.5 foot bowsprit, makes it a 33 foot boat. There's a lot of difference between $300,000 liability insurance for a 33 foot boat and none for a 29 foot boat, which can cause as much damage or more with its wake. That's all I'll say on that. The other thing I'm going to point out about the insurance is that all of the premiums for the insurance are going to go to places that are not Wrangell. Wrangell has no based insurance company. This money is going to go into the pockets of insurance companies, and the only way anybody's going to get it back is if a boat sinks and the harbor department gets it back. So I'd like to see the insurance requirement dropped to maybe $100,000 or less. Now, as for the surcharge, that money also is going to go only to the harbor department. It's not going to get spread around the community. Doesn't matter how much you set it at, whatever it is. It's not going to get it spent across the street at the grocery store or in one of the bars or at Dave's or Audison's or Century or even the churches. It's not going to go only to the harbor department. And so you should set that at a reasonable rate, somewhere south of 50 cents a foot per month. That's my, I'm done.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ellis. And Chris Ellis, you want to speak on item 13A when it comes up?
Sure.
Okay. And next up, Mr. Murphy, Steve Murphy. Would you like to speak now or on a certain item?
Well, I don't know if it's on the agenda.
Okay.
And this is kind of a new little wrinkle anyway.
I'm going to speak on the flags at the cemetery.
Okay.
As we usually leave them up till about the end of August, but now there's a new rule apparently that they are up 7 days. And then the city will take them up. I'm not sure where they went, but anyway, so I went to take them up, and the city had already done it. But anyway, the posts, the holders for the flags are still in the cemetery. Don't seem to be a problem taking care of the cemetery. The flags are in the holders. The flags should not be in bothering the maintenance of the cemetery. Also, I'd like to see it extended 2 weeks. If it's going to be a week, why a week? Make it 2 weeks, and that way we can leave the flags up for Memorial Day, Flag Day, and the 4th of July.
Okay, two continuous weeks?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, see, that overlap. June 14 is Flag Day, Memorial Day. 2 weeks is Flag Day. 2 weeks from there is 4th of July.
Okay.
Solve that problem right there. Like I say, the flags are in the holders, so they're not really affecting the maintenance anyway.
All right.
And there are flags. We like checking on them to see that they're taken care of.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, that's what I wanted to say.
Okay, good suggestion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good evening. Any other comment from anyone? All right. Amendments to the agenda. Borough Manager, Assembly, any amendments to the agenda? All right. Conflict of interest. Any Assembly member have any conflict on any item? All right. Hearing none. Item 6, consent agenda.
Move to approve the consent agenda as submitted.
Second.
All right. Motion by Morrison, second by Otteson. Discussion. All right. Hearing none. Poll vote, please.
Assembly members Morrison?
Yes.
Otteson?
Yes.
Powerful?
Yes.
Dave Powell?
Yes.
Ward?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Mayor Gordon?
Yes. Item 7, Borough Manager's Report. Would you like me to go in order? On the report?
I think we're just going to do a verbal for myself tonight. And
all right.
Assembly members, we're going to keep it a shorter meeting and can read the reports as desired.
Okay. And for the public, we do have an economic development report that will be on the website, library director's report, Nolan Center report, and then we'll have a verbal borough manager's report.
Great. Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thanks to the members of the public showing up tonight. We want to start off on the annual diesel run that we have going on for SEPA maintenance. We have one more day. I don't know the exact cutoff for tomorrow. Hopefully they finish early and quit incurring fuel and oil charges. So we did do something new in our surcharge this year. We've actually started the meters at the beginning of the diesel run, and we're going to stop them as soon as the maintenance run is done, so we can adequately charge people based on their actual usage. That was an idea that the mayor had come up with in past years to actually allow people to save some money during the diesel run. So we've implemented that, and that seems to be going well. You may have noticed there was a glitch in power at about 3:30 yesterday morning. Unit 3 went down. We thought we blew a cylinder. We didn't. Things back up and running good. That allowed us to actually run Unit 5, which had the control upgrades. And that's been running great, so I'm happy that that's the case. And still having a little bit of trouble syncing up and bringing it online, but once it's running, it's good. So Dave Buss is going to make another trip to town in the new fiscal year to kind of assess resiliency. And I think we are going to look at putting in the budget that you guys hadn't seen yet in the Municipal Light and Power CIP fund, an overhaul on Unit 1, which has been puking oil for quite some time. And we want to do an overhaul to increase resiliency. So we'll be looking at that, and you guys didn't see that in the budget. But after this last maintenance run, I think that's a priority we want to pursue. So just an FYI on that. Hikes Construction that did the bluff pinning and the 6 mile bluffs, that works at about 90% complete. You guys can notice the pins going away 20 feet into the mountainside, so that's really great. Something we leveraged our partnership with DOT on, so excited to safeguard the public in that way. We've also utilized their services while they're in town at the dump, which I know that many people were concerned of the rocks sloughing off when customers are out there. And so we used Glenn Decker to cut down some trees up there. And so we've stabilized the mountainside and took a lot of the rock debris that was in jeopardy of falling to safeguard the public. So that's a great resource. We're also looking at Mount Dewey. We got a couple reports that up on 3rd Avenue adjacent to the trailhead there that there's some sloughing that are occurring or potential for it. So we're going to look at maybe utilizing the services. All this is done for fairly cheap, so and well within our budget to do so. So some improvements there on the safety front. Water treatment plant continues to be constructed and tracking below budget, which is great. So hopefully we'll give you some pictures this next meeting of the building being erected and the floor being poured. So really exciting there. We have two property requests for purchase that are going to be coming to the Assembly. One is a industrial lot, and then another one is a series of industrial lots. 5th and 6th Avenue went out to bid. It's going out to bid today, and so is the solid waste transfer station loading dock project that we had $250,000 of funding achieved through the Denali Commission. So two exciting updates on those projects. We do have a series of other projects to get out to bid, and you know, Amber's working hard to get those out, but two more added to the list, which is great. Exciting news, we hired a new police chief. His name is Gene Meek. He spent the weekend with us, and him and his wife Michelle And I know the mayor and I had dinner, had coffee with Assemblymember Powell and him on Monday morning. And 30-year career in law enforcement. He's the former police chief in Soldotna, relocating down here to Wrangell. His start date will be July 22nd, and brings a really great experience to the community. I think he's going to really excel in community outreach, creating a visible police force. He's got a really great history in drug enforcement, and I think he'll fit really well in with CCAD. So we're excited. I hear he played open gym on Sunday, so already getting involved with the community. So really great. We welcome him and his wife to town in July. So, and if you think about it, we've hired a lot of positions over the last month to 2 months. So I think at one point we had 7 positions, and we've chipped away at those. So excited to reload. We have a senior project manager interviews tomorrow and Thursday and Friday, so that position is looking to be filled as well. So after that, it's really just finance director and controller. So we're tracking well. Personnel regs, we're going to provide that update to the next meeting. Just haven't had the time to go through with a fine tooth comb, make sure that there's consistencies with the collective bargaining agreement, and add in any iterations that we want to change from the prior year. So be on the lookout for that. I also have a budget amendment slated for next meeting for the debt service fund. We didn't put the transfer of $247,000 to the debt service fund from the SRS fund like we were supposed to. So just kind of a housekeeping item to make you aware. And I have that integrated in the FY 2025 budget. Old Hospital, a little bit of an update. Prospective buyer Wayne Johnson is going to come to town on June 20th. There's still a little bit of negotiation to be had. We will accept the funds prematurely. They have not been wired yet tonight. And then we'll allow for a little bit more time to negotiate the finalization of that deal. And he'll actually speak to the item when we get towards the 25th. So just an update on that. Provided assembly member DeBoard, the sales tax figures are requested. So he's got Q1 through Q4 sales tax. Can kind of understand why I'm saying we're coming a little bit low this fiscal year, fourth quarter, but truly on an accrual basis, Q3. And then he also asked for the senior exemption numbers, which is $41,360,000, translating to about $403,000. So that's about our lost property taxes. Really interesting. I got to kind of dissect Petersburg's budget today, just because they roll it out theirs by June 15th each year. They have over double the general fund that we do. So when Kate says in the work session that we're doing a lot off a little, it's very, very true. They have about $13 million general fund. We have $6 million before projects. So they double our property tax, more than double our property tax base. So just for sake of comparison, I found that interesting. So I said the DOT Bluffs project got done. Raise grant, keep your eyes out, June 27th. So 2 days after our next meeting, we'll get the word on the $25 million. So hopefully we're popping champagne bottles. Really want to thank Representative Ortez for his service to the community of Wrangell over his tenure in the State House. He's decided he's not going to seek re-election. And so I just want to appreciate that. We may pass a resolution next time around, but he's done a lot for our community, and we look forward to working with the next representative, who I'm going to guess is Jeremy Bynum, and I haven't seen anybody else come to the table, but we have great working relationships with him. And I asked the mayor, we probably shouldn't endorse candidates, but we want to endorse the winner and work with them. So
we can.
And last but not least, a comment to Steve Murphy. I know that he's not here anymore. I did get word that some of the flags were removed from the cemetery. There's some pretty bad winds and weather that we experienced. A lot of the flags have blown across the cemetery, and we're mowing, and we didn't want to run over flags while we're mowing and stuff. So what we did is we collected the flags. I don't know that he was aware, and provided those back to the Legion to put back out there for the 4th of July. Oftentimes what happens at the cemetery is people place things out there. We have to relocate them so we can weed whack and mow. And if we don't relocate them, then it grows up around the gravesite, and people are mad that we don't do a good job mowing. So we're trying to find that balance. I have pushed back on, I wasn't aware of a 7-day rule that was being pushed out, but apparently there was one. I don't know if that's been around for a long. We're going to push that out. We just ask community members to be cognizant of where they're putting things and try to put them out of the way of mowing and weed eating activities so we can get through that efficiently. So a little update for that. And I don't have anything else. Any questions?
That's an easy problem to solve.
Yeah.
I think the 2-week extension was a good idea.
I guess, you know, we had a really productive budget work session. I would just say thanks to everybody that participated in that. We have several projects slated. We're trying to be a little bit more efficient in how we scope projects, not doing 40 projects in one budget, let's do five and get them done kind of thing. Hallmark projects for the budget cycle are McKinnon Street, the cemetery expansion, the public safety building exterior, so the siding, the roof, the school major maintenance project, which we'll figure out if the governor line item vetoes Wrangell or not by June 30th. I don't think so. I think he likes us. Mm-hmm. So we'll get those projects and a number of others. But overall, about a $6.1 million general fund budget prior to capital projects, after which we're about $1 million deficit after operations and capital expenditures. So.
And this budget process was a little bit dicier than in the past because we set our limit and then built a budget to fit that limit.
Certainly.
In other words, like people do with their own personal budgets.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a different wrinkle on the process, but a nice conservative one. Also, we have the Buy America, Build America waiver that I was so worried about for the water treatment plant. So we did have an alternate plan if that waiver didn't go through, and I still cannot believe we got that waiver, but that's a good thing.
It's a really good thing, and it makes the accounting for the water treatment. We've kind of been planning for that, so we've accounted in a worst-case scenario,
right,
but that makes things a lot easier for us, and it frees up some funding for reimbursement. So all's going good on the water treatment plant, and
yeah,
it's always a little nerve-wracking having $24 million of cash flows in 15 months, so we've done a good job, and thanks to Amber for navigating that process in its entirety. You reminded me, I don't know how, water treatment plant, but I also want to put a plug out and really thank our search and rescue team for assisting Petersburg. And really, we were first on scene. Petersburg was delayed, so we have a really premier search and rescue team, and I know that Jordan Buness, our fire chief, Steve Persunka, and Jimmy Nelson all responded. We were able to save one person and recover another, and without those services, I don't know that that would have happened. So really appreciate them. That was Chief Buness's first day on the job, and just a testament to his character and kind of hitting the ground running. So I've met with him, too, just about his goals and expectations, and he's got a complete new vision for the department, and really excited to work with him and our new police chief on cultivating a different approach to public safety and a better one at that. So thanks.
And regional.
Regional.
Try to incorporate other regions. And then also for the public, we how they can, if they're interested in buying a city property, where they go on the website and the process. I'm catching you a little off guard.
Yeah, that's fine. Typically what I do is I go under the planning and zoning, or I'll go to forms under resources on the borough's website. So you go to resources, forms, and under forms there'll be request to purchase borough real property or tide lens, or request to lease borough real property or tide lens. And there's actually a nice basically sequence events that you'll go through in that process. There'll be an application fee and some preliminary information that you fill out, and then that'll start the process. You'll provide that to our clerks up front or to the economic development director, and it'll go from there.
And then there is a map on our website that if they're interested in a piece of property, they can see who owns it.
That's right. So we have our Wrangell GIS, and then there's ArcGIS, so you can easily see. And a lot of people have Onyx Hunts, which also shows the property owners. But lots of ways of figuring out what property the borough owns in terms of real property tide lens. You'll notice that our entitlement lands are on that, but kind of vaguely scoped out.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a plan to make those useful.
Okay. Any questions? Assembly member DeBoard.
Just bring this up again as a premium for these land sales when people request them, similar to like what mental health has. There's a lot of work that goes in, people are requesting them. I would just really like to see a premium on them.
Okay. That would require a code change, and we'll look into that.
And the economic development director and I have looked into that, and it's actually a pretty easy code change. It's a matter of figuring out what a relevant figure is. We don't want to just throw, we're going to charge a 17% premium just because. We kind of want to capture what's the true cost it takes internally to orchestrate one of these deals, and then what's an acceptable premium compared to comparable sales in the market right now. So,
and for the public, what is a premium?
A premium would be an additional amount charged on top of the fair market value as appraised by our appraisal company of Alaska. So, for example, if we charged a 10% premium on a $100,000 lot, they paid $110,000 total consideration for that property, plus the appraisal and other fees associated with the application.
And concerning codes, Assemblymember Morrison and I are on the code committee along with the borough clerk, and we are looking at conflict of interest. We've had trouble with that code before. Mm-hmm. It's been interpreted several different ways by several different attorneys, so we need to get that cleaned up. So we're going to work on that. Any other questions? All right, thank you. Item 8, borough clerk's report. We have a copy of it in our agenda. Do you have anything to add to that?
Nothing.
All right. Any questions on that, Assembly? All right. Item 9, mayor and assembly business. Does any assembly member have anything to report? Assembly member DeBoard.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would just, there was a good article in the paper from June the 5th talking about our aging population. 27% of the population was 65 or older last year, and it's up from 19% in 2015 when the population was even larger, 2004-42. So a couple of things are concerning to me. Is one or two things, the following are both are accurate. Declining population of young adults, increase in number over 65, or combination of both. I would argue with the declining roles in the schools over the same period of time, it would kind of indicate that we are having a pretty significant decline of population. And kind of going back to what Assemblymember Morrison had said previously in the work session, just as concerning to me. I think we need to do everything we can to try to sustain the population, especially younger adults. And the reason I asked the manager for the senior tax exemption, and I know I'm beating a dead horse with this, but it just bothers me. It's $400,000 that we aren't getting that the state is supposed to be reimbursing us for that they aren't. And for this year's budget, that's going to represent a potential loss of two positions who are younger or working class people by definition, right? So if we actually got the money that we were promised, then that wouldn't even be on our agenda to even be looking at cutting that. And it's a snowball effect because those positions leave, who replaces them? Who can come in and afford a $400,000 home at a 7 or 8% interest rate for a 30-year fixed mortgage? So just a bigger concern of mine overall is a sustainability, and would really like to see the legislature give us the money that we were promised. And that's decades. It's $400,000 a year, mm-hmm. and it's been decades. So that's $8, $10, $12 million over the span of what they haven't been paying us. And the other thing that really bothered me about this is we had to set up here in the Board of Equalization and make some really hard decisions because by law that's what we're supposed to do. And by law this is what they're supposed to do. So I would like to see them make good on that. I know it's probably a pipe dream, but just something that really concerns me about our sustainability of our community.
Yes. Assemblymember Morrison.
You know, I don't know, and as long as I've been on the assembly here and other places, that we've ever really gone after that money that is owed to the municipalities by the state. I vaguely remember when it stopped coming. I mean, it was a lot of money coming to other, you know, to here and to other places. It would be very interesting to find out what could be done as a class action lawsuit against the state. I don't know.
And we do go petition the state every year through AML. Mm-hmm. It's one of our top
and
resolutions.
It just kind of goes.
Right. Right.
And this is something we've talked to the state delegation about, and certainly in my time here, but I think even in previous administrations. The other thing, too, is we do get community assistance, which is kind of bridges the gaps a bit. That floats between, you know, $350,000 to, I think we had $407,000 this last year. Mm-hmm. It has bridged the gap in the past, but still, that's really not what the purpose was for. We've been getting that anyway, so just something to think about. I think we've continued to leverage Alaska Municipal League. They came out with a great report showing each community's loss in property taxes and the rate or the proportion of seniors in their community, and projected that out in an assessed value, and we were one of the top dogs. We were the top dog in that report, so not something we necessarily want to win at, but it does have an effect.
Well, and the $400,000 is reflected in 2 mills, the property tax rate levy, and that's significant. And we dropped our mill rate 3 mills, and we maintained that rate this year and did not increase that. But there is an unintended consequence, and I can see the state, they've threatened to do this before, is to make it an option of the local community, and that will be a battle.
That will open a can of worms.
Yeah. So, but the state's interest in terms of real property tax and personal property tax, because they estimate our personal property tax every year, and that's where the school funding formula is based on, and that's where the state tells the communities how much the minimum and maximum contribution we give to the schools. So yeah, there's a lot of parts and pieces to that problem. Any other questions or comments? Any other business to report? All right. Mayor and Assembly appointments, there are none, so we're going to move to a public hearing. Item 11A, Resolution Number 06-24-1868 of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, approving the amended fee and rate schedule for water and sewer fee increases and for adding a credit card surcharge for sales tax and property tax payments, and adding an online check payment fee. I'm going to request a administrative report, open up the public hearing and request an administrative report on this item.
So I'm gonna start with water and sewer. So if the Assembly recalls, we adopted port and harbor rates, municipal light and power rates, and sanitation rates, but we did not, we pushed pause on water and sewer. And the purpose in that was evaluating the health of those funds and accommodating our water treatment plant debt service, as well as preparing for secondary disinfection at our wastewater treatment plant, and in advance of the five-year provision on our 301H waiver. So we got to prepare for that. It's looking like a really expensive project. Early estimates were about $15 million for disinfection, and then for secondary treatment, looking up to $40 million. And that's kind of the narrative of Wrangell, is we always secure state and federal funding to subsidize those kind of material projects. But even such, we're still going to have to prepare for designing a project of that nature. And it doesn't seem like the EPA is going to let off on that, and DEC either. So,
for the public, explain in your administrative report the problem that we have to do secondary treatment on our wastewater.
So basically, DEC's allowed us to operate on a waiver for all these years, and the affluent goes off into Stikine Straits. They're basically threatening to pull that after 5 years and require a secondary phase of treatment or disinfection. As they contemplate that and further regulation comes out, we're gonna have to address it. And so a $15 million wastewater treatment plant upgrade would be required for potential disinfection. Secondary treatment, like I said, could be upwards of $40 million to meet that criteria. I believe Anchorage was about $1 billion or something. So we're not alone. There's 9 communities across Alaska that need to meet this mark, but it may just come down to the reality of hey, we can't afford this. I guess you're going to have to penalize us because you can't force us into bankruptcy. And I would imagine that it's going to be an unfunded mandate, but I know that Senator Murkowski's put forth a $10 million CDS request for a wastewater treatment plant upgrade.
Okay. All right. And then the other increases?
Yeah, so just really briefly, water and sewer 3%, that mirrors Ports and Harbor Sanitation, and Light and Power didn't even have a 1% increase. We tried to keep those stagnant with SEPA. We just rounded up to the nearest quarter cent. And then we also have credit card surcharges in place. We're going to start collection of sales tax and property taxes online, so people will be able to use their Alaska Airlines card or credit card. So that's going to roll out before October 15th. It'll probably be towards the fall time when that rolls out, but that's something that the Assembly and the public have requested for years and years. So this is implementing a surcharge in preparation for that. Additionally, and this is something I'd like to debate tonight a bit with you guys, if we require a surcharge for sales tax and property tax, we may want to look at utility payments, which this does include a fee for online checks, but it doesn't include a surcharge for utilities. We've currently, in a fiscal period, eat about $100,000 in credit card fees in the processing our online utilities. Most people pay online. And so that's concerning that the general fund, often the finance department, that's where it gets coded to, is eating that, and then the enterprise fund, actually it's not being allocated out to the enterprise fund, it hasn't ever, but it may be up for assembly consideration to look at that. But
we'll talk about that when we get a motion on there. Any other administrative report?
Nope.
Okay, I'll open up the public hearing. Is there any public testimony on this item? Right, I'm going to close the public hearing and entertain a motion so we can discuss this.
Move to approve resolution number 06-24-1868.
Second.
Okay, motion by Powell, second by Otteson. All right, discussion. Assembly member Dalrymple.
This is just a question because I'm familiar with it, but this online check and a fee, does that go to the bank?
So essentially, NCR is our processing company for utilities online, and they do charge a fee. So this is just replicating that.
Is that done commonly with all payments?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I've never seen it shown or a fee to it.
Yeah.
So it comes to the merchant.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when you say an online check, if I go to the gals out front and write a check, I get charged that fee? No,
that was a physical check, and there's no additional fees associated with that.
Okay, that was the question I had from a community member.
Right. Essentially, an online check is almost like a direct deposit, so it's linking that payment directly to your account instead of using a form of credit card.
Okay. Like a debit charge?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions? Assembly member Powell.
2.75%
Percent
for credit card.
That's the anticipated surcharge for Payit, which will be our online payment system for sales tax and property tax.
If you look at comparables, Petersburg's at 3%, and then Juneau's at 3.29% for online.
Is that directly? I mean, we're not trying to make money off of this, okay?
No.
We're trying to recoup what we're losing. So you're telling me that 2.75, they're charging 2.75, and Juneau, that just seems extremely high to me because I know what we pay for credit card fees, and it's not 2.75. It's only like a lot lower than that.
And it could be that, in your case, the Bay Company is subsidizing that. I mean, I don't know if it's a one-for-one, but I think it's fairly common to see.
I wasn't talking that business. I was talking about the other one. But that's beside the point. It's just that, and we always have people calling us and saying, "Hey, I can drop you to 0.2% or 0.1% if you go with us." And I'm just wondering that it just seems high to me. If you're doing a lot of business, usually that rate comes down.
There's some economies of scale built in. this, my understanding is at a fixed rate. And the other thing is people still have the option to mail in or provide a check, so it's not like they're required to pay it.
I just assumed that it was very high to me. I mean, but if it is what it is, I guess if that's what the company you're using.
And we'll continue to review competitive solutions throughout the year, so this won't be the end-all be-all, but the point being we don't want to offer a new service and then lose further money on what we're already eating is $100,000 on utilities.
And the 2.75% charge if you use credit card is only for sales tax, and that's remitted to the city and property tax.
That's correct.
Okay, and currently there's no service charge or fee for utilities.
That's correct.
And we may be.
Well, there is. We just pay that.
We pay that. So we may look at that in the future. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Madam Mayor,
Assemblymember
Dell. Another question, I guess. When you have a mortgage payment that includes the escrow, and the company pays that,
mm-hmm.
are they accruing that fee? Like my escrow company, when they pay the property tax, is there a fee with that?
So generally with the escrow companies, what they'll do is they'll send us a spreadsheet, incorporating all the properties. We'll then send that final spreadsheet, and then they'll just send a check encompassing, the entirety of all those parcels. And if it's just a regular check, cash or check, there's going to be no fee.
Okay.
So I'd also like to point out that the usage rate for online payments for utilities is at 60%. And so if you generally just come to a general consensus of a 60% usage rate for online for sales tax and property tax, you'd be looking at an additional $94,000. And that's just basis. So you'd be almost doubling the amount of fees that you're already paying for online payments.
You know, it just occurred to me, is there some savings? Because I have mine on auto pay. Is there savings to the city for getting prompt payment? In other words, you'll never miss a payment from me. I won't, space it out and forget to come with a check.
Well, there is savings. You won't get a late penalty.
I guess there's savings for me then, huh? Okay. All right. Well, that's a good thing. Any other questions? Are we ready to vote on this? Assemblymember DeBoer.
One thing I looked up real quick, bankrate.com article from 2023 says average credit card processing fees are 1.5% to 3.5% nationwide. So it'd be right in the middle of the nation standard.
2.75, yeah. And if it couldn't be negotiated, we
certainly
would. If it is lowered, do we need to embed that in the code?
We would, this is on our rate schedule, so we'll be able to
update
this.
Okay, we can adjust it, on
resolution.
The rate schedule. Yeah, by resolution. Okay. Any other questions? All right. Poll vote, please.
Assemblymember Otteson?
Yes.
Elemental?
Yes.
Al?
Yes.
DeBoer?
Yes.
Robbins?
Yes.
Morrison?
Yes.
And Mayor Gilbert?
Yes. We have nothing in item 12 on unfinished business. Item 13, new business. Ordinance number 1057 of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending section 14.05.025, general mortgage conditions and restrictions of Title 14, Harbor and Port Facilities of the Wrangell Municipal Code, to add a new subsection requiring marine vessel insurance, or alternately to require users to pay a mortgage surcharge.
Move to approve first reading of ordinance number 1057 and move to a second reading with a public hearing to be held on June 25th, 2024.
Second.
Okay, motion by Powell, second by Otteson. And before we have any administrative report, I'd like to have our persons to be heard. Chris Ellis to come forward. and speak on this matter. Thank you. I'd like to say thank you for the changes in the new draft that took into account some of the public comments that had been made previously. I think there are still a couple of issues that need to be addressed or at least thought a little bit more seriously about. I'm not sure where the $300,000 insurance requirement came from, but that is a very substantial amount for individuals who are already having a hard time keeping up with all of the cost of living increases in everything, including upcoming harbor expenses. I'm not sure why, because that amount is so much in excess of any amounts that have been noted as having been incurred by the harbor already. It just seems like it's a little bit overdone. The other thing is limiting the insurance requirement to a 30-foot vessel. I'd just like to point out that basically a large number of the 20 to 29-foot vessels are cabin cruisers, you know, fiberform things. And one of the problems that was raised was the potential issue of damage coming from fires as well as damage coming from sinking. Fiberglass boats burn like trailers, basically. Most of those cruisers and things have electrical systems that are subject to shorts and potential problems, and most of them have some kind of a heater. So again, they are potentially as liable to having fire damage as a larger vessel. I'm somewhat biased because we have a larger vessel, we have an older vessel, but basically, you know, the potential for damage and harm, which we haven't yet seen very much of in this harbor, isn't all that much less for a smaller boat than it is for a bigger boat, but you're putting the burden of any potential harm on the mid and bigger boats. The issue of the surcharge, I would like to specifically request that that be a designated separate fund, designated only for the problems that it is attempting to address and not go into general harbor maintenance or general city maintenance. Again, basically, you're looking at one small portion of the users to cover general potential damages that are not covered by insurance for the whole users of the harbor. So you're only taking one small portion. And the majority of these people are not necessarily the ones that are going to cause the problem or have any problems. But you are asking that money to be taken from them rather than other people. You know, yes, it will sit here and wrangle, but it should be in a designated fund. It should be in a high interest bearing fund, because it shouldn't take that long. You know, like, I know we've got CDs with higher rates of interest that are making money, but they can be closed out fairly quickly to pay for any potential damages. So that should be considered in terms of, you know, that fund. The other thing is that you don't list any criteria for setting that rate. Initially, you had proposed a $5 a foot amount. This one just leaves it up to a resolution of the council, but doesn't give any criteria on how that amount is going to be set, which means that it could just as easily wind up being an outrageous amount, or it could be a nominal amount. I would point out that the only one I can find specifically was Juno, and that's right now at 31 cents a foot. The other thing I would think that you would want to look at is some kind of a way for disposal of boats that need to be disposed of. The city does have some property. It does have the deep water port, but you might want to think about some place to put those boats that need to come out of the harbor where they can be destroyed and dismantled on the beach as opposed to raising a sunk boat at a later point.
getting a boat that's not able to pay moorage or is not supposed to be in the harbor is a much better idea than leaving it there to sink. But having a designated place where it can be dismantled and destroyed or resold to somebody else is something you might want to think about. Is something that you can recoup costs on and might build up a new economy and business for the city, because it's a problem all over the state. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Administrative report here.
Yeah, I want to thank you for the public comments. Yeah. I know that insurance is a complex and tricky issue, but the council had, or the assembly rather, had invited me to bring this back to the meeting tonight. So I'll kind of give a brief overview, and then I'll give Steve Miller the opportunity to chime in if he has anything additional to add. But generally, Ordinance 1057 requires liability coverage to include salvage insurance for vessels in excess of 29 feet. It establishes that you must list for non-transient vessels, the CBW is an additional insured. That way you can't go out and get insurance and then cancel it the next day and we're not aware about it. It also establishes a surcharge to be applied. And as Chris Ellis has pointed out, that has not been brought forward. I wanted to get the structure right that the assembly wants before bringing that forward. Regardless, you know, we have a fee and rate schedule that we can quickly adopt a surcharge or adjust it as necessary. It could be as nominal or, you know, material as possible, or depending on the circumstances. And what I didn't include in this ordinance was that that money was going to be retained into a special fund, which could be an additional consideration of the assembly. That way, if it reaches the level of, say, $100,000 or $200,000, whatever the threshold being, then you can lower the surcharge to little to nothing and handle it that way. Additionally, it requires the harbor department to assess maneuverability of vessels at least once annually. So this is for fire specifically. You need to be able to prove that your boat can go beyond the breakwater at least once annually. That likely won't be much of an issue because most of the harbor department's observing a lot of vessels going in and out all the time. So they may have a few vessels that they'll have to observe. But generally, if they have a checklist in their vehicle while they're going around to each harbor, they should be able to cross quite a few of those off. So it shouldn't be a crazy burden. That does include float houses. You'll have to demonstrate to us that you can move your float house. It doesn't really matter to us what the mode is, but if there's a fire, you need to be able to demonstrate to us that you have a plan and that you can move your vessel from moorage. So the other thing too that we talked about is strategically insuring floats that are at high risk. So we're evaluating that to reduce the burden for potentially for fire or other things. So This isn't comprehensive insurance. This is just liability coverage. So if you're if you hit one of our docks and, you know, or sink one of our floats, we can replace that. If your vessel sinks and we have to take it off the bottom, and there's also potential for pollution of the harbor, we can remediate that. So this gives us that avenue. What else was there? The level of coverage. I want to talk about that. So we reviewed level of coverage with our insurer, PW Insurance, and the difference between $100,000 and $300,000 was fairly nominal. And additionally, we looked at other communities. So Whittier, $300,000, $1 million for commercial vessels, Anacortes, $300,000, Port of Anacortes, $300,000, $1 million for commercial, Bellingham, $300,000, and they have a whole separate policy on commercial, and then Port Townsend may be reduced to $500,000, but they even require it on their kayaks and canoes to have liability. So that's taking it to an extreme, but this gives us the tools to mitigate risk. I think if you don't go through with this option, then we should increase the rates for ports and harbors to build up or fund to address that and self-insure the risk. But either way, this is what the assembly, I think, wanted. And the Port Commission kind of gave us a general framework to build off of. And Steve, I'd kick it to you if you have any additional things to add.
I'll answer any questions if they come up during the discussion.
And the other thing I think that Chris pointed out that's really great is the Harbor Master does have the authority to remove vessels that are of concern. So, you know, encourage our harbor master to take advantage of that, and he's aware of that. So.
And the other thing to point out to the public is when we set any rates, we have a dedicated public hearing that goes along with that.
That's correct. And so, the rationale behind the vessel restriction, looking at the liability that a larger vessel could potentially cause in terms of salvage or sinking a float or a series of floats, is far more substantial than, say, like a 19-foot glass ply. Fire is always going to be a risk, so ensuring our floats would be the best, strategically ensuring our floats would be the best approach to that. And if it's a vessel that burns down another vessel, it's really a civil case, not ours. So.
And did you, in your research, find any limit below 300,000? I never found one.
Not in my research. I know that is an acceptable level of coverage. The assembly could certainly prescribe that if they wanted to reduce that. But per our insurance experts and looking at other communities, that's the standard.
Assemblymember Powell.
So I got a lot of questions because this has been weighing on me a lot. For one, how much have we spent of city money for damaged floats or fired floats in the last 20 years?
I couldn't answer that. Not for 20 years.
Can you do 10?
So the public can hear you, please.
Probably in the $50,000 to $100,000 range, if we added everything up.
And that's damaged floats from sinking.
Well, not even necessarily damaged floats, but the cost to the city, which would be other things other than even damage to the floats, which would be recovery or disposal, or I mean, that number runs higher and higher. So.
Okay, so Steve, the other thing I was going to ask is, and this is kind of like a round question on what I just asked you, but since what you've been doing with derelict vessels or impounded vessels, and since the tug thing that was kind of was one of our biggest mistakes that we've made, you may have discussed this, but we're not going to make that mistake again. So if we take that one out of the equation, then we're like minimal.
Yes.
Okay. So, and we can all agree that was not just the fault of that, was kind of our fault too, yeah, that we didn't do something with that.
Right.
So on the insurance thing, I did a lot of research on this insurance, and I'm just going to put it myself in this predicament. Okay. I insure my new boat for $220,000. I mean, it's way more than that. And the only reason I came up with that number and did that is because it lowered my rate substantially. So, and I just did this today. I called and asked about a lot of rates. And it gets, when you get past $220,000, it just starts climbing. So the $300,000 mark was on my rate for just my boat, went up to $2,490. So that from 1884 from 220 to 300, and if I went to $400,000, it went up to almost $4,000. So, and the only reason I insured my boat for that is because I was looking at, it's an aluminum boat, it's self-bailing, it's virtually unsinkable. I mean, if nothing's unsinkable, you know that for a fact. But I'm looking at it for my stupidity of hitting something or knocking my boners off or something like that. And the reason why I say $300,000 is a lot of money, are we looking at, this is a question for you, Steve, are we looking at salvage of a sinking boat, or are we looking at...
See, that's the part that can get expensive.
Right.
It's definitely salvage.
And I thought we were looking more for, like, if, say, my boat's now, it's 35 feet long. So you're going to require me to have insurance in harbor, which I already have, but I don't have $300,000. So if my boat sunk at one of your 40-foot stalls, okay, that's what I'm looking at. What kind of damage am I trying to recoup for?
The last one didn't necessarily do a lot of damage because, like, we got there in time to cut all lines loose and just let it fall to the bottom. But the recovery is what cost the most amount of money. That was over $80,000 just in one incident. Luckily, the Coast Guard stepped in and paid that, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be there every time a boat sinks. Mm-hmm. We got extremely lucky that time. So
okay, so another issue is, I have full coverage insurance, okay? Which I found out later on that doesn't necessarily cover sinking. Okay, mine does, but there is full coverage insurance out there that doesn't.
Right, you have to.
And you have to add that on. Mm-hmm. So if you start adding these all up and adding them on, I'm just going to say it. I mean, I'm going to insure my boat no matter what. Okay, I can't afford to replace it, so I'm going to insure it. That's the way I look at insurance. Okay, but I can understand that. You know, here we talk, and I'm going to Mr. DeBoer over here. We talk about our aging community, our retirement community, and here we are starting to add more and more fees on to everything. And to me, it's like, are we going to push people out? And that's what I worry about more than anything. Are we going to push people out? Is there people that are going to come in here and take the place of the people we're pushing out? And I know, Steve, you can't. I'm just talking. I know you can't answer that. But it gets very, I mean, I want to insure our floats. I want to. There was another question. I don't know where I found this at. Some guy was asking online about insurance. Can you buy a personal bond for a float that you tie to? Can I, you know, buy a $500 bond that I pay a bond every year that'll insure that finger? I don't know that. I'm trying to spitball ideas here, because when you start going to $300,000 for insurance, it gets quite expensive. And that's a brand new boat. Right. I don't know what it is on a 25-year-old boat, a 30-year boat, a 50-year boat. I have no idea.
But as you've seen with some of the incidents that have happened too, people have lost their vessels that have been $300,000 vessels.
Yep.
And people didn't have the insurance. So, I mean, I know that all turns into a civil matter, and we don't really get involved in that.
Well,
but we could get involved in that now if we are negligent in any way. So, I mean, and that can be found in any court. So.
And you're exactly right. And that's the whole thing. I mean, we look at, in case point, the Juneau fire that just happened, okay? That's a civil matter, though. I mean, we're not asking for insurance because Patty's boat burned my boat down.
Right.
Okay, that's me, my insurance company going after her because I had insurance and she didn't. That's a whole different issue, and that's what I want people to understand. That's the issue. We're not trying to insure that. So when I say the $300,000, it is a lot of money to me to insure one of our fingers, you know what I'm saying? Now, granted, I don't know what a 80-foot finger costs, okay, compared to a finger that I'm going to tie up to.
Right.
I don't know what that costs.
$200 a square foot.
Pardon me?
They're going for about $200 a square foot, $240.
And that's what the raise grant people suggest.
That's the newest rate that we've got. Yeah.
So each finger, if it's a 30-foot finger, it's $240 a square foot.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I would also make a couple remarks. A, you could reduce the level of coverage in this. You can certainly amend that. That's the Assembly's prerogative. But the Harbor Master and I were instructed to bring this back to the Assembly, not necessarily say that this is the best way forward. So this is really a debate on that.
But, correct.
Either self-insure it or create some insurance structure and perfect it over time. And this is the best solution we could come up with.